Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Dalet 294 Shelo Lishchod Behema Uvna B'Yom Echad, not to slaughter an animal and its offspring on the same day. Shelo Nishchod Behema Uvna B'Yom Echad Bein B'Kodshim Bein B'Chulin. This applies both to sacrificial animals and regular animals that we just want to eat stam. Shenema Oso Vezbeno Los Ishchatu B'Yom Echad, literally him and his son, you shall not slaughter on the same day. Although the masculine is lav dafka, as we'll see later. Bishor shi'a mitzvah. The reasoning is as follows. Shi'itein ha'adam elibo ki ashkochas Hashem baruch hu al kol minei balei chayim bichlal. That God's attention is focused on all different types of animals. Ve'im hashkochosu aleihem yiskayimu la'olam. That they're going to endure based on his supervision, his watching them. That when God is paying attention to things, that ensures that they last. We don't want any species to become extinct. And if God stops paying attention to them, then they're going to become extinct. I guess God wasn't particularly interested in the dodos, types of animals that became extinct. Shashgachaso al min ha'adam bifrad, that God's hashgacha applies to each person individually. For people, we have what's called hashgacha pratis, that God pays attention to each person individually, but for animals, there's no hashgacha pratis. So if your beloved dog runs across the street and gets hit by a car, and you say, you know, how could God do this? So God doesn't pay attention. God doesn't protect individual dogs from suffering punishment. Animals, that God only pays particular attention to each person individually, but for animals, it's just a general watching of the species to make sure that the species sticks around and doesn't go completely extinct. The Od Nuchal Lomar Binyan Al Hatsa Al Tzad Apshat Kimokain Shehulik Boa Binafshin. So if you shech the two animals, two generations of an animal, at the same time, on the same day, it's as if you're denying the God's supervision of this species of animal. You're saying, well, I'm going to kill the parent and I'm going to kill the baby animal, and we're going to, it's like, even though you're not going to get rid of the whole species that way, it shows that you have to pay attention to that, the fact that the species should continue. So you don't want to shech two generations on one day. Yeah.
Interesting, because I have often heard these.
The idea is it's not a full explanation. This is just a little bit of a suggestion of maybe some way to understand it. That more a simpler explanation is that we are trying to develop compassion. That even though that we're allowed to shecht animals for our purposes, for eating, or other purposes too, but mostly for eating, right? So you don't need shechita for that per se. That we should at least, it's like some sort of siyag, it's like a fence somehow on the idea of shechita. So we're allowed to kill animals for our purposes, but we shouldn't just have completely free reign. We should have some restrictions on it. So some of the restrictions are at least the mother and the child. So don't shecht on the same day. Just so while you're shechting, while you're busy, you know, shecht them in the slaughterhouse, while they're busy, you know, shechting, they, you know, mindlessly almost. So they at least have to pay attention to this mitzvah in order to maintain a sense of compassion, even though they're busy all day killing animals.
So why is it in the masculine then?
Oh, we'll get there. Yeah. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos are as follows. Masham zichron levracha. There's a chapter in Masechet Shkulin called Osov Esbeno. She'ein chiluk bein Osov Esbeno o benot tchila v'achar kachayim. That it doesn't matter which one you shecht first, whether it's the offspring or the parent, you have violated this mitzvah. Masha Amru, you might think from reading the pasuk, Osov Esbeno, that is dafka, the parent first, and then the offspring. But no, it's either way, you violate the mitzvah of Osov Esbeno. So ordinarily, if you buy an animal, you know, you don't have to be concerned. In halacha, you don't have to be concerned for remote possibilities in general. So if you buy an animal from your local farmer, who's mostly selling you animals to shecht, so you don't have to be concerned that he sold the mother or the offspring on the same day, and maybe the person who bought the mother is going to shecht on the same day as you. So that's such a far-fetched possibility. You don't have to be concerned for that. You don't have to ask. You don't have to talk about it at all. But there are four times a year that people are shechting so much, so many animals, that if you sell an animal for slaughter, then you have to inform the customer that you also sold the mother animal that same day. That at these four times of year, that the assumption is that they will be slaughtering it immediately for immediate usage.
But do they have to follow up on this information you just gave them?
Well, they're not allowed to shecht it that day.
Oh, they're not allowed to shecht it that day.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
So what are the four times a year where people buy animals and they don't let them stick around? They're going to be shechted for immediate use. Ve'elu hein, Erev Yom Tov Ha'acharon Shel Chag, Erev Shmini Atzeres, even though on Sukkot, you know, the first 7 days you also really are supposed to eat meat for Simchas Yontif, nevertheless, there's a higher level of simcha on Shmini Atzeres. That's supposed to be, even though it's technically a separate holiday from Sukkot, it's adjacent to Sukkot, so it's part of the same thing, which we call in halachic literature Hechag, the holiday.
Right.
So the Shmini Atzeres is considered the happiest day of Hechag, which we sort of, nowadays, we sort of think, oh, Shmini Atzeres, that's the, you know, that's one that comes way at the end when we're all exhausted from, we're all exhausted from everything already. But really, fundamentally, Shmini Atzeres is supposed to be the happiest, most festive day of the entire Yontif season. And that's why people are all busy shechting their animals immediately for usage on Shmini Atzeres. The Erev Yontif HaRishon Shel Pesach, that also the era of the first day of Pesach, because the first days of Pesach are also considered to be somewhat more festive than the last days of Pesach, because they have the Seder, you have the more elaborate rituals. So Erev, first days of Pesach, you also have to tell the customer that you sold the mother animal. The Erev Atzeres, the day before Shavuos, because Shavuos is only one day, and it's Yontif, so you have to eat meat. Right? Shavuos? Meat? So this is a major focus of the halachic discussion surrounding the minhag to eat milchiks on Shavuos, that you see that people who eat only milchiks on Shavuos, for all in Eretz Yisrael 2 or in Chutz Aretz 4 meals, or 5 if one of the days of Shabbos.
I'm tired.
What?
This thing about milchiks, I thought it was like one or two meals.
Excellent. Oh, so you got it right. So there are people who think, oh, the minhag is to eat milchiks on Shavuos, so therefore we are going to make all the meals on Shavuos milchik.
That's the thing from Parv.
Yeah.
Milchik.
But Parv is nothing. You know, I'm a kind of minhag at all on Shavuos. If you serve only fish at a meal without any milchiks, that you... It's neither here nor there. You didn't have the meat for Yontif, and you didn't. No, again, if you're a vegetarian and you dislike meat, and you fish is your favorite food in the world, so you could eat fish on Yontif, but that's a different discussion. That has nothing to do with the milchiks.
Right. Right.
On you put milk in the sauce.
You could put milk in the sauce. Yeah, sure, that's fine.
If you're not Sephardi,
Yeah, some Svardim don't mix. It's probably, it's very difficult. It's based on a certain, might be a typo in the base. So whatever it is, there's no prohibition of eating fish and milk, obviously, in the classical halachic literature. Ashkenazim don't have this minhag at all. There's no problem with fish and milk together. But, you see that people who have all milchik meals on Shavuos, so the poskim say, you see from this Mishnah, that says that that everybody shechting meat on Erev Shavuos shows that at least some of the meals on Shavuos are supposed to be fleishik. And that's why also it's interesting that the pshat and the minhag, according to the Ramah, the way the minhag appears in the Shulchan Aruch, is that the minhag di milchiks on Shavuos is reminiscent of the minhag of shtei halechem. That since there were two breads offered up as a korban on Shavuos, So the way that the minhag of milchiks is reminiscent of this is that first you make kiddush, you make hamotzi, and you have a milchik first course, and then you have bread with that. So you have to, now for your second course of the meal, you're supposed to have fleishiks. So you take off all the milchiks with all the bread, and then you have to bring a new bread onto the table in order to eat with the fleishiks. So that's
Zeichel
L'Shtei Alechem.
You don't have to wash again.
Right. I'll get to that in a second. Yeah, it's a little tricky. So according to the Rama, the way he understands the minhag, if you don't eat milchiks and fleishiks, you're not mekayim the minhag to eat milchiks. Because the minhag to eat milchiks is predicated on the assumption that you have fleishiks afterwards. So that's part of the shtei alechem. So that's why, according to the Rama, you have to eat both milchiks and fleishiks in order to fulfill itself the minhag to eat milchiks.
And afterwards, not be at the next meal?
Maybe. So a lot of poskim, first of all, there are many poskim who give other reasons for the minhag to eat milchiks, such as Matan Torah, that before Matan Torah, they didn't know Hilchot. They knew they were going to get the laws of Shechita, but they didn't know what the laws of Shechita were yet, so they ate only milchiks. Another pshat in the minhag is that it's reminiscent of Dvash V'cholav Tachas L'shonech. Then in Shir HaShirim it says, honey and milk under your tongue, which talks about, allegorically it means, it's talking about the sweetness of Torah. So according to that understanding of the minhag also, you're not yotze the minhag with fettuccine alfredo. You have to have davka cheesecake.
Wait, how's that again?
Because according to that understanding of the minhag, it's dvash v'cholav tachas l'shonech. It alludes to the pasuk that says honey and milk under your tongue,
right,
talking about how sweet Torah
right.
is. So sweet dairy foods. So you have to have davka sweet dairy foods as opposed to savory dairy foods. But there are many reasons for the minhag milchik, so we assume that even if you're not doing exactly the way the Rama says, you still eat milchiks, and that's why some poskim say are not so into the minhag of the Rama to have milchiks first course and fleishik second course, because in the Zohar it says that you're not supposed to have milchiks and fleishiks within the same meal. Or within the same hour, it says. That's why some people wait an hour or half an hour between, even if you eat milchiks first and then fleishiks afterwards. And Medina de Gemara, according to the Talmudic law, there's no waiting period required at all if you eat milchiks first and then fleishiks. So the Rama is going with the Dina de Gemara, that you're allowed perfectly fine to eat milchiks first and then fleishiks afterwards. But again, according to none of the explanations of the minhag, is it required or suggested or any way advisable to eat every single meal on Shuas milchiks? So how a lot of people got to the point where you eat every single meal milchiks on Shuas is a little bit beyond me.
It's practical probably, because try to create a meal where you try to what happens to your kitchen if you don't
You just have
cheese.
Have dessert first.
Right, you have dessert first. You have the just make a cheesecake before.
Plate.
Nowadays we have disposable plastic tablecloths, so it makes it easier. So you put a disposable plastic tablecloth. You make hamotzi. You have your cheesecake. This is if you're doing according to the model. You have your cheesecake, and you take off the tablecloth, wash your hands, and continue with the fleishiks.
The challah becomes contaminated by being on that milk of the tablecloth.
What? No, I said throw it away.
Throw it away.
The challah, not the
challah. Yeah, that's the point. You have to take that's the pshat in the minhag of the Rama.
Throw it away.
That the Rama says that you are supposed to get the bread contaminated with milchik, so you have to bring a second bread with the fleishiks. That's why it's reminiscent
just
of the shtei halechem.
No,
you eat it. No. But you eat it with milchiki hands. Remember, people didn't have forks in those days. They would grab a slice of cheesecake, and then they get grab a slice of bread. No, it wouldn't be. It would be a little dirtier than what you're imagining. So that's why. So because of the issue of the Zohar and also of these practical issues that you suggest, so that's why the Darkei Tshuva, who's one of the famous Darkei Tshuva, was written by the Mincha Tzeruv. So he is a very he has a lengthy analytical commentary on Yoredeya. So in the section where it talks about the waiting period between milchiks and fleishiks, so he has a whole discourse about the minhag of waiting, about eating milchiks on Shavuos, and what the correct practice is. So he was a chassid, Minkach, who was a Chassidish Rebbe. So he was very into the Zohar, so he didn't like the idea of having milchiks and pleishiks in the same meal, like the Rama said, even though the milchiks come first. So he thinks that the best way to be Mekayim the Minhag of milchiks on Shavuos is Yadav and Shacharis, you have milchik at Kiddush, and then you go home and you have fleishiks during for the meal.
What about your wife who was home preparing the meal and didn't make Kiddush, have this milk at Kiddush?
Who said, well, the Kiddush could be at home.
Oh, okay.
I mean, here we have a Kiddush and milk at Kiddush and shul.
I'm sorry, I take that.
But problem. If you have your Kiddush at home, so eat your Kiddush at home and then wait a little bit and have your milk, have your fleishik suda. But you could do, according to the us, non-chassidim, that we assume like the Ikar Adin, so then you could technically do the like the Rama and have the milchiks and the fleishiks in the same meal. The Arkei Tshuva discusses over there that some people have the milchiks at night and the fleishiks during the day, but he doesn't like that either. Also, the Rama says when he talks about the minhag, because you have to have Simchas Yantif at night also with meat, because Yantif on meat, Yantif you're supposed to eat meat because it's considered a higher level of Simcha, of joy. So he also, if you look at the Rama, quoting earlier sources, that the minhag of eating milchiks was specifically in the morning of the first day of Shavuos.
Uh-huh.
That they didn't do this at all on the second day of Shavuos. So we are machmir. We want to have our cheesecake. We're machmir and we want to have our cheesecake both days. So fine. So we have our, according to the other reason, so maybe it makes sense to have milchiks both days. So that's why we have, and nowadays that we have a shul kiddush. So, so we have Milchik Kiddush and Shul, and then, that's what I do, I know other people do, but we go home after the Milchik Kiddush and Shul, and we have the Fleishik Suda at home.
So, Rav Kook became a vegetarian towards the end of his
life. Yeah.
So how did he cope with this, having to eat meat on Yom Tov?
He assumed that it wasn't it was more subjective, that if it brings you joy, then you should eat it. But if it bothers you, then you don't have to eat milk. Then you don't have to eat meat. Now again, there's different perspectives on exactly how required it is to have meat per se on Yom Tov.
Yeah, at the time of Regalim, then when they had to bring a korban chagiga, then it was really a requirement to eat meat in reality, right? Because you come to Yerushalayim, you have to bring korban chagiga.
You had to.
So when you see it from here, from the one when the shechita involved, it's because it's mitzvah d'oraisa really, korban chagiga.
That's the source for the requirement of Simchas Yantif, right? That's the Gemara says that really the basic requirement of Simchas Yantif is to eat the korban chagiga. That's why some poskim say also that. Since on a fundamental level, the Simchas, according to the simple understanding of the Gemara, on a fundamental level, it's really the Korban Chagiga that's the kiyum of Simchas Yantif. So maybe nowadays there's no requirement per se to meet at all in Yantif. But the Rambam says there is a requirement nowadays, and other people say so. Most people enjoy eating meat, so therefore it's appropriate to meet on Yantif. But women technically don't have the strict requirement to meet on Yantif because they weren't. They didn't have the requirement to eat the korban chagiga.
Oh.
So that's why it says that women's simchas yantif is. We're going to have we're talking about yantif later in this parsha, I believe. But that's why it says that women's simchas yantif is getting new clothes and jewelry, not eating meat. But if a woman enjoys eating meat, it's certainly acceptable and encouraged that she should eat meat on yantif as well as part of her subjective simchas yantif.
Meat, yeah. Wine, and new books.
Okay,
that's
great. No, that's 100% right. If a woman enjoys new books, so her husband or for herself, if she doesn't have a husband, so she should acquire new books for Yantiv. What we used to do in yeshiva, by the way, on Shavuos, was we used to have Shalosh Shudas, even though it was Yantiv, so Shalosh Shudas is not technically required, but in order to be Mekayim this minhag in perhaps the most ideal way. Right, so no. We used to have milchiks. We used to have fleishiks at night. Then milchiks. Then we used to stay up all night and daven early in the morning. Then we used to have milchik breakfast with washing, with all sorts of dairy foods. Then bench. Then we would go to sleep, and then get up, and then we would have a fleishik suda in the early afternoon.
That's
arguably the most mehudar way to fulfill this this mitzvah, but most people don't have the wherewithal for that. What?
You mean the financial wherewithal or the physical?
Physical. I mean, both, but yeah.
So it was my somewhere it was like a late lunch slash early shalashudas.
Yeah. But you don't have to be nizar on Yantif. I mean, it was in the afternoon, but on Yantif, if you're reading shalashudas, you don't have to be nizar that it's at the proper time, because there's no requirement, according to each shalashudas on Yantif per se. On Shabbos, you have to eat shalashudas after what we call mincha gedola, which is a half an hour after midday. So, okay. And what's the last time where you have to tell...
Half an hour after midday?
That's mincha gedola. And then
Mincha Gedola is the earliest time you can eat Shal Shudas, which is half an hour after.
It's not required that you eat it then.
Right.
You can't eat it. It's not Shal Shudas before then.
Right.
It's snacking.
Right.
First world problem.
The final time that you have to tell someone that you sold the mother to Shech that day is Erev Rosh Hashanah, which is another day where everybody's eating meat. So you see, for every yontif, you see there's one part of the unit. So either it's not the people, I guess, couldn't afford to have fresh new meat all the time. They didn't have the same volume on the first days of Pesach and the last days of Pesach and the first days of Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres. So at least during each yontif unit, they had one day where they had this mass of people who were shechting. So Rosh Hashanah is also a day where, according to the basic halacha, so you eat good foods and meats, and it's a shaila whether you're allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. Some very pious people fast on Rosh Hashanah because of the day of judgment. But according to the pasuk in Nehemiah, talks about Rosh Hashanah, so it says after they lay in the Torah, so Ezra told everyone to go home and enjoy fatty foods and good drinks because this is a holy day for God. So you see that's why the Vilna Gaon, among other people, were against fasting on Rosh Hashanah. You see, it's supposed to be a day of enjoyment, but there were people who had the practice to fast during the day on Rosh Hashanah.
How widespread was that?
Not very. Yechidim. Individuals, not not very.
Fast the day after Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you.
Right, so you fasted 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and some Gedalia, but you eat a night. You're not obviously not allowed to fast.
Oh, a daytime fast.
You're obviously not allowed to fast the night of Rosh Hashanah because you have to make Kiddush. So there's a requirement to make Kiddush.
Is the person who makes Kiddush Yotze if he doesn't drink the wine?
No. What do you mean?
But a wine is Yotze.
What situation?
Somebody makes Kiddush. It covers you whether you drink part of the wine. Is that correct?
Yeah. According to the basic halacha, yeah. I mean, on Friday night, there are shittas that hold that you're not yotze kiddush unless you drink part of the wine. So that, and everybody agrees that it's preferable that everybody around the table taste part of the wine.
But it's not a din. It's not absolutely required. So what about the man who makes the kiddush? Does he have to drink?
Somebody has to drink the cup in order to be, for everyone who hears that kiddush, to be yotze that... that kiddush, according to many authorities, it has to be the person making kiddush, him or herself, who drinks the cup. I mean, this is not normally an issue anymore. There are people who are more machmir, incidentally, for kiddush Shabbos morning than for kiddush Friday night. That everyone in attendance should taste the wine. Why? Because on Friday nights, you have the Bari Priya Gafen, and you have the Asher Kitchan Mitzvah Ratzavah Hanu. So you have the extra bracha there that's in honor of Shabbos. So the person listening to the Kiddush, so they say Amen to the Bari Priya Gafen, and you have the extra bracha that's in honor of Shabbos. So basically, the cup of wine is a vehicle to say the bracha that's in honor of Shabbos. So if you say Amen to the extra bracha that's in honor of Shabbos, so you're Yotze Kiddush. But the Kiddush Shabbos morning is just Bari Priya Gafen. So it's just the bracha on the wine. So if you didn't really make a bracha on the wine in the sense that you actually drank some of the wine, so you're not yotze the kiddush Shabbos morning. That's some people say that. Briskerov famously held like that.
Could one make a case that if you made the bracha and didn't drink the wine, it's a bracha of the
Torah? No, I'm saying even if you're sitting around the table, you have a person making kiddush, Bar Priyagof, and the person making kiddush himself drinks the wine, and you didn't taste the wine Shabbos morning, so according to the Briskerov, you're not yotze the kiddush.
Yeah, well,
how is that possible when there's a big crowd and somebody makes kiddush for a whole big crowd?
Well,
anything's possible. You're saying it here in shul. Here in shul, in theory, we could, you know, have someone appointed to fill tiny little shot glasses with grape juice before Kiddush, distribute them to everyone.
A man made Kiddush, so what? You can distribute.
Well, what about if you're in a hotel for Shabbos?
That's what I'm talking about.
So they usually pour. On each table, you have a huge dining room. Even if one person makes Kiddush on behalf of the whole dining room, so you have a bottle of grape juice on the table. Everybody pours themselves a little bit before Kiddush. Yeah.
Oh, because
of course not.
Everybody should pour themselves a little grape juice before Kiddush. When Kiddush is over, you taste it. Yeah. It doesn't have to be from the exact cup.
It doesn't have to be poured from that cup.
No.
You'd never get done. You'd still be there.
No, that's right. It doesn't have to be from the exact cup that's made Kiddush on. You're just supposed to.
You're not yotze if you don't drink some wine.
I didn't say I paskin like that. I just said that the brisker. It's if possible. Yeah, everybody agrees, both Friday night and Shabbos day, it's the preferable practice that everybody around the table, everybody who's being yotze Kiddush at that point, should taste some wine. Everybody agrees that that's preferable. So we don't need to get involved in. You know, are you yotze or not? Because you should be doing that anyway.
Right.
But lemaisa, most poskim assume that you are yotze even if you don't taste the wine both Friday night and Shabbos morning. Yeah.
On Friday night.
Yeah.
And the wine is given to a child usually.
Yeah.
So this is a brocha, and the wine is given to a child. So it's not the chazan.
Why is that?
Doesn't drink it if there is a child.
Kiddush and Shul is a different animal, because Kiddush and Shul is not that anybody's really being Yotze Kiddush with this. It's a remnant of the times where you used to make Kiddush and Shul on behalf of the guests who were, you know, eating in the Shul social hall. Or some say in the Shul itself, whatever it is. But it's because the idea is that once the takana was in place to make Kiddush and Shul, so you don't stop it, even though it's not technically speaking, relevant anymore. But the rules that govern that are different. Okay, uchedivre Reb Yossi, af erev Yom HaKippurim bagolil. The Reb Yossi says, also erev Yom Kippur in the Galilee, because everybody would eat meat on the erev Yom Kippur in the Galilee. Nowadays, most people don't eat red meat on the Sudam of Sekes or Yom Kippur. Normally, we just eat poultry because it's lighter and easier to digest, and it's not gonna affect your kavana in the davening as much. That the person who's selling it has to inform the customer. That the customer does not have to ask. Mishum the fake sveka who I love, because there's still many doubts about what's going on over here. Maybe the mother of this animal is not alive anymore. Maybe he didn't sell the mother to Shech today. So you don't have to ask, but the person who's selling it, who knows what's going on, has to inform the customer. Let's say two people bought the an animal and the child. Zeshelokach rishon yishchod rishon. The person who made the first purchase has the right to shecht the animal first. So if the second purchaser, went ahead and shechted his animal first, I shecht my animal. I shecht my animal first. Ha, watch. You shecht the animal. So nothing you can do. Nothing you can do. You have to. The first one is not allowed to shecht anymore because Lemaisa, the other member of the pair, was shechted already.
If you do this on the cusp of one day turning into another, there doesn't have to be such a time delay. I'm doing
that's
it at
true.
6 o'clock and you're doing it at 6:30. And
on a day worse, or I'd say it's like a chavim,
yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's true. That's true. It all applies to also has been only applies on the same day. Once it's say it's like a chavim, then you and you shechted it before that, so then you you are allowed to shecht the other member of the pair.
But so it's not really about necessarily about your intentionality, because if you sell it. You have the mother and you sell the baby to somebody else, and it goes off and or it's done through a third party or it's all anonymous in the marketplace, and nobody really knows which animal is related to which animal.
Right. If you have no idea way of finding out, you don't have to be concerned because of the many doubts.
Okay.
Yeah. V'din hashochet para u'shnei baneha, u'shnei baneha v'achar kachi, v'chein hi uvita uvas bita. Umut, so let's say you have, well, you shecht the mother, then you shecht two of the offspring of this mother, so you're chayev twice. But if you shecht the two children first and then the mother, then you're chayev only once, because the maisa, you only did one maisa. The same thing too, if you shecht, if you have the grandmother and the mother and the child, so then if you have three generations, so then it would depend also that if you shecht the grandmother first, then the mother, then the child, then you'd be chayev twice. But if you shecht the grandmother, then the grandchild, then the mother in between, so you only be chayev once, because it's one maisa shechita going on over here. And
moo,
yes.
It's also shif, usually born in Paris.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the shif, the. So mm-hmm. The shif has two.
Sheep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that applies to sheep as well, not only to cows. Why do we say on cows?
And it applies to sheep. It's just examples.
Yeah.
They're just examples. Yeah. Umutar lishchot ta'em im bas bita. You're allowed to shech the grandmother on the same day as the grandchild. It's only specifically the offspring, direct offspring, that is usher on the same day. I would add over here also that this only applies to, I don't think you mentioned this explicitly, that this only applies to shechita. If you have a shechita that was not technically kosher, even though you then, let alone if you you shoot it or something like that. So then you're allowed to shecht the other member of the pair the same day. But even if you have you try to perform a shechita, but it doesn't come out
right.
Mm-hmm. So then that is also would not be considered a proper shechita, and that would not that you would be allowed to shecht the other member of the pair on the same day. So let's say you tried you were in the middle of the shechita, and then whoops, you pressed the knife into the neck instead of going in a cutting motion. So then that would be problematic. Also, if you discover that your knife had a nick in it, to the extent that would render the shechita not kosher, then you would also be allowed to shecht the other member of the pair. This is what we said, that if you shech the cow and its granddaughter and then the daughter, so you only get one set of lashes. You were chayiv twice in theory, in the eyes of God, you're chayiv twice. But nevertheless, since it's just one maisa, you're only chayiv one set of lashes. Okay? Umash Amr Zichron Livracha, Sh'isr Osov Ezbeno, Eino Noeg Elabinikevo. Even though it says in the pasuk in the masculine, really Osov Ezbeno is only relevant for the mother animal, not the father animal. Shamru beferush beno misha beno karuch acharav. That means an animal whose child is running after it, is attached to it. So in the wild,
it's the mother.
Right. So it'll be the mother. The mother gives birth, and it's right there, and that's the one that the offspring latches onto. It doesn't know who the father is.
Mother
might not even. Right. Dahainu hanikeva. Umikom makom achi asikna bechulen ima pirushim atovim. If you know for sure that this animal is the father, and again, under normal circumstances, you have a corral of sheep, and you have males, and you have females, and the females give birth occasionally, and who knows which male sheep the father of this baby sheep is. So then you don't have to be concerned at all. You'd be allowed to shecht any baby animal with any male animal in the flock. You don't have to be concerned that this is its father. But let's say you have only two sheep and they're in a pen together, and it's a male and a female sheep. So it's absolutely impossible that the father of the baby sheep is anyone but this male sheep. Then you're not allowed to shecht. Shein shochten oso im beno biyom echad. You're not allowed to shecht the father and the child on the same day. Mishum de paskin and hasta malach and Rabbi Yehuda lefianishma midvar v'sapuke mispikalei choshishin lezera avim lo. As machlok is in the Gemara whether you have to be concerned by animals for zera ha'av at all, for the male line of yichus, so to speak. According to some opinions in the Gemara, a male animal has absolutely no relationship, halachically recognized relationship, with the offspring at all. That in animals, the relationship is only between the mother and the child. So in that case, if that were true, then even if you have just the two sheep in the corral, then you would be allowed to shech the father and the baby animal, the child animal, on the same day, even if you know for sure. But we are worried for the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that maybe lechumra, we assume, choshishin lezera ha'av, and maybe when it results in a stringency, we should assume that a father animal has a really halachically recognized relationship with the baby animal.
Yeah, because these animals, they're herd animals. So there is one male over 10 females or 20 females. The more the stronger the bull, the more females he can get. So usually that's how the herd is constituted. There is only one male. If there is a young male in the herd, eventually it will challenge the old male and either will be expelled from the herd or will take over. That's how they roll. That's what it is about.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
So basically you do know who the father is in the herd because it is
really
full.
Well, but it's if they're not right, if there's only one and it's completely fenced off, but it's in theory possible that maybe the father is someone else, even though it's very, very unlikely, as you say. Maybe you lent the sheep to someone else for a day.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Maybe it's maybe far-fetched, but...
Yeah, there are two males in the herd, they'll fight.
Mm.
So there will be only one left.
Uh-huh. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but
that's why they castrate,
even if it's
farmers castrate other bulls, because otherwise it will be impossible to handle.
Uh-huh. Right, so in this situation, again, but it might be very, very unlikely, and if they're castrated at a young enough age, might be indeed impossible, but if there's even a remote possibility that there could be another father, so then it wouldn't apply. If you recall all the way back to when we were talking about kilayim, they're not allowed to interbreed animals. So let's say you have a mule that's... What's the name? There's a different term for whether a mule is the product of a horse and a donkey.
Right.
But there's a different name if the donkey is the father...
Jackass?
I think it's a different name.
Was it a henny?
Henny, I think, is a female donkey.
Right.
There's a different name. No. Maybe in English there's not a different name, but there's a different...
No, I think there is.
Anyway, So the question is, if there's a mule and the father is a donkey and the mother is a horse, so... And you have a mule who's... the opposite, so then you wouldn't be allowed to interbreed them because we're not sure whether it goes just according to the mother or you go according to the father also. Because if you go according to the father also, so then you'd be allowed to interbreed a mule whether the father or the mother was the horse and whether the father or mother was a donkey, because they would be recognized halachically as a combined donkey horse. But if...
Aren't they sterile mules? I think you can only produce them by...
Yeah. That's true. Oh, no, but it doesn't matter. Even if they're sterile, it doesn't matter because you're still not allowed to have them have intimacy with each other. Intimacy is the wrong word. Mate.
Mate.
Intimacy is the wrong word for animals, I think.
I don't know. You always have that much control over it.
I mean, if you're a breeder, I mean, the Gemara talks about actually... in making the insertion, sticking it in so that so that would not be allowed. Even if it can't result in offspring, you're not allowed to mate them physically by hand to mate them. Right.
Well,
so if that's the case, so again, If we're worried, if choshen lazerav, if the father has a halachically recognized relationship with a child animal, so then it doesn't matter. It'd be a combined horse donkey, and you'd be allowed to mate them together. But if we're not sure that the father has a halachically sanctioned relationship with not sanctioned recognized relationship with the offspring, so then. If the mother is a, you couldn't be able to mate them because, in other words, the mother of one is a donkey and the mother of the other is a horse. So they al pi din, maybe this one is just a horse and this one is just a donkey. Or you wouldn't be able to mate it. I'm sorry. Even with if we don't go according to Zerahav at all, so imar bin alei lo sus velo chamur elamina. So if the father is a donkey and the mother is a horse, so then. If you're not worried about the Zerahav at all, so you'd be allowed to mate the offspring with a horse. Because al pidin, this would just be a horse. V'yavas v'ralei, dein chojin v'adei l'zerahav lo yamarkein. He wouldn't have said this. Ela hachi havalei l'meim, marim rabin alea ela mina mitzad eim. He would have said that if he wasn't concerned about Zerahav, then you say you wouldn't be able to mate with it. You would only be able to mate it with an animal that was the correct one from the maternal lineage. Right. Elavade la rabbi Yudah sapuge misbekale v'chik amr in choshin zarav kabanas lomar shel nachosh zarav lahakel badavar. What he means is we're not going to be worried about the paternal lineage when it results in a leniency, but avalachmer vade nachosh zarav zabon. In other words, you'd be able to mate the two animals together. But when it results in a stringency that you wouldn't be allowed to shecht the father and the child on the same day, then you are concerned for the paternal lineage. So if it would be a result in a chumra, if you weren't concerned for the paternal lineage, then we do not concern ourselves for the paternal lineage in such a case. So according to this, it should come out that if you know for sure who the father is, then you have to be concerned vis-a-vis Osov Ezbeno. The rest of the details are in the 8th parak of Maseches Chulin. It's in all places and all times, the males and females. Again, if you shechted, it doesn't matter which order, as long as you shechted the mother or the father, if you know for sure who the father is, and the offspring on the same day, this would result in a requirement, a penalty of Malkus.